You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Could you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong. When I turn right, but you turn all the way.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome. Welcome to our conversation today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm truly honored to have our guest with us, one of the wisest and best people I have ever known. And so, today we're going to talk about a tough topic, money and mental health, thanks to our mini-series sponsored by Adam H. Board of Franklin County. I got some great advice once, that if you're in the presence of wisdom and greatness, the best thing you can do is be quiet and listen and learn. And that's just what I'm going to do. I welcome our guest with great honor, and I'll ask him to introduce himself, and then he's going to share with us some wisdom about money and mental health. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am Grady Pettigrew. My professional credentials include being a member of the Bar of Ohio for 49 years and having served as a judge of the United States Bankruptcy Court for 9 years. I have spent a lot of time on the issue of money, and I have spent a considerable amount of time on the issue of mental health. And the reason for that is that you can't, in our culture and in our country, you can't spend much time with people without eventually getting to the issue of money. Do they have it? Do they not have it? Or do they have enough? So when we have the topic of money and mental health, it opens up an awful lot to talk about. I'm going to limit what I'm going to talk about today to the perspective of that 18 to 55-year-old in the middle of our economy and our culture, and the fact that issues of mental health are in all different contexts. In some cases, we have people who have too much money, literally too much money, and they end up using that money to their own detriment. We have a number of people who have too little money, and in many cases, that has caused mental health issues for them individually as well as their family members. And we see, in many instances, the community around them suffering from mental health issues. About 70% of Americans are concerned about money. I don't mean just simply interested in the topic. They're concerned about their access, the quantity that they have, and the balance that money represents in their life. Very few people will tell you they have just the right amount of money. But having the right amount of money is a practical, laudable goal and will result in so much satisfaction with your life and your living. For a person or family under stress of too little money, the question is, what are you going to do to fix the problem? With this younger generation, the question is often articulated, what is the plan? There is a well-recognized formula for the personal or family plan to protect or recover good mental health in the face of money problems or issues. There are articulated 5 steps to reset finances. 1, analyzing the spending that you or your family makes. Adjust your budget is 2. Well, that means you have a budget, which is a written plan. 3, check your net worth. That's very simply, how much in the way of assets do you have, and how does that relate to your spending? 4 is check your credit score. And the reason the credit score is so important is that in today's culture, the individual doesn't count very much. The credit score is what businesses and banks are looking at. That is, what does an agency say your value is? You have a high, a medium, or a low score. And then 5, set practical and realistic goals for your spending as well as your handling money. There's a 6th item that is often suggested by counselors or advisors in financial areas, and that is to visualize success. If you are about to step out on this plan and you can't see it as succeeding, you are or may be defeating yourself before you even get started. So from the standpoint of what I have seen the question of financial distress actually end up resulting in chemical or substance abuse issues, which only dig a deeper hole. If a person's already dealing with too little money and they're spending their money on chemicals, which include liquid chemicals, and I mean by that alcohol, that doesn't help to resolve the issue at all. But what it does is help the person deny that there is a problem, because it gives them a certain amount of time when they're under the influence that they don't even have to acknowledge that. One of the issues that has developed in, I won't say recent years, but recent decades, is that many things that were considered just a normal part of life in America have become very difficult to achieve or cost prohibitive. Let me use as a simple example, higher education. When I was a young person, education, higher education, was considered a part of national defense. The point of it was that college educations were financed by national defense loans, which were loans from the federal government. The interest rate was a simple 3%, and you had 10 years to pay that loan back. So if I use the personal example, when I graduated from high school, I pursued a college education, and I paid for that college education the same amount that some of my friends and classmates paid for a new car. I would only ask you, which had the lasting benefit? Those cars became less attractive, less useful, less whatever over time. And my college education only became more valuable and an opening or a gateway to different life choices. Now, to finish that story, we had political decisions that said that higher education was no longer a part of the national defense. And so what happened was they turned financing higher education out to commercial interest. The 3% central interest immediately went to 12% interest, and it had higher annual percentage rates. In other words, that 12% was to produce more than a simple 3%. So any day that the person had borrowed the money, they were increasing the amount of debt because it hadn't been paid back. So that's the reality that we live in. And unfortunately, there are many people who are caught. Now, yes, we've had some political recourse of debt forgiveness for educational loans. In my opinion, that's what should have happened because it never should have been turned over to the commercial interest, and the fact that people seeking a higher education were the victims of people who were just simply out for the money. But it's clear, if we look at what happens to families, that debt and financial problems can lead to poor mental health. The vicious cycle of poor financial health and poor mental health are well documented over any number of studies, and the clinical link between financial worries and mental health, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and domestic violence. And actually, I think today it could be documented that community violence is also one of the consequences. Financial problems adversely impact mental health. So clearly, if we could avoid, eliminate, or in some cases mitigate financial problems, we could reduce the whole issue of poor mental health directly related to money. One of the components of any plan for dealing with money in our culture, and actually in cultures around the world, is based on a written plan, a budget, or a money management plan. Another word for budget is a money plan. But a budget is only relevant if it's addressing the individual who's looking to manage their money. Many resources, textbooks, magazine articles, even opinions from various newspapers will talk about an ideal plan. In many cases, the ideal plan will recite the 50-30-20 rule. 50-30-20 rule. Now, this is just based on the abstract that says 50% of your funds should be addressing mandatory expenses. Simple thing: food, lodging, transportation, health care, insurance, things like that that are not fluctuating, but that you need to have in order to have any level of security. 30% is allocated for wants and discretionary spending. So that would include entertainment, a trip, maybe clothing or some item like that. But this would be something that does not occur month after month, that is discretionary. And then this 50-30-20 rule is recommending 20% for savings and debt repayment. Well, there's one real challenge even in that 20%. If your debt repayment is so high, it could consume the 20%. Well, what do you have to work with at that point? Your savings are zero and your 20% is addressing debt repayment. So really, this is something that needs to be introduced very early in life, and individuals need to be working to manage their money within that 50-30-20 rule from the beginning. There are little in the way of tangible items that we can look at. If you were dealing with an income of $4,000 a month, the 50-30-20 rule would say that your mandatory expenses should be $2,000, that your wants and discretionary spending should be $1,200, and that your savings and debt repayment should be $800. Well, in some communities, the cost for a very basic apartment is at least $1,500 a month. So how does that 50-30-20 rule become instructive if you live in a community where, from the beginning, it doesn't balance? The literature reports that 22% of Americans have zero savings. Zero savings. And there also is a report that 23% of Americans are in concerned about debt, excessive debt, and their limit on the ability to satisfy that. Those are statistics from 2024, not 1999. And the reason I comment on that is because the stress that we are relating to mental health issues based on money is increasing to a large extent because we are not in a generative society. And what I mean by that is a generous and fair reward for the work or your contribution to the economy. We're in what's called a gig economy, and basically gig economy is setting you up saying whatever it is you can get, that is what you're going to have to live on. And under those circumstances, no one knows what they're going to make day to day. They start out the day with zero, and they have to be able to count at the end of the day what they have in the way of income. That's a pretty unstable situation, and one that can cause and certainly introduce a great deal of stress. And it increases if, in fact, you have family responsibilities. So in looking at this, we still are talking about mental health, and nobody in the mental health field does a service to their clients without first identifying what is the issue. And then after identifying, helping them to address or to find a solution. We have centuries of culture that create the atmosphere in which money is just such a difficult topic. It is conceded that many, many people in America feel that rich people are better than people who have low income or low wealth. Doesn't matter that those people may have cheated, may have abused, may have done all kinds of things to get the wealth. It's a part of our culture that says, well, they must be better than I am because otherwise we would both be in the same circumstances. I don't claim it as a good joke, but I used to tell people when they were talking to me about the importance of where you're from. In the people I encountered, people who were born in Boston or Philadelphia or some of the East Coast locations would claim and certainly boast that they were better educated, better in a number of ways. And my response in those conversations, which I was in the process of cutting off, was that I wasn't able to plan where I would be born. My parents decided that, and it's inescapable circumstances decided that. So I don't know what the percentage is, but it's well in the 90 percentile that most people cannot, did not, and are not responsible for not deciding to be born on the East Coast in what was a part of the original colonies. But that focus is a part of why money causes financial stress. There are a number of triggers that are just a part of the culture, but the individuals may not be responsible for. So one of the triggers is a job loss. Very few of us will have listened or read the news, and were not exposed to a notice that said that some major corporation was letting thousands of people go, regardless of their number of years of service or what they considered their contribution to the company to be. We also have a number of people who've made a misstep with money, a misstep that could have been as simple as someone thinking that gambling was entertaining, as opposed to addressing the actual reality that it is based on a transfer of wealth. And, of course, we have governments, not just state government, federal government, that doesn't even think about controlling gambling. What happens is the gambling institutions have set up a contribution to a program to address gambling issues after the gambling issues arise, and in most cases are pretty substantial. But one of the key elements that I look at and still feel should be included is to address the lack of personal financial education. We have people who finish 12 years of education in our public school system and in private and charter schools who don't even know how to write a check, who have never been presented with a model or teaching a family budget, personal or family budget, and who really don't know that under most circumstances, the key is your personal liability. So, for example, an individual who at 20 years of age has graduated from school, high school, gotten their diploma, and has decided that they want to live in their own apartment. Many of them do not know that when they sign that piece of paper, they are financially obligated. The whole reason for the piece of paper being presented was to get a financial obligation, something that is enforceable, including in a court of law. So we have situations now where people say, well, that's not the case because I only did this on the internet. Well, the law has developed now that if you give your signature on the internet, you can be as obligated as you would be if it was with an ink pen on a tangible piece of paper, because business is being done on an international and certainly nationwide basis. This thing about a piece of paper has been reduced, not necessarily eliminated, but certainly reduced in terms of the requirement. So the individual who says, I saw this, and it's not just an apartment, I see the commercials, you can buy a car online. All you have to do is tell them which car you want, and you agree to a certain amount, monthly amount of payment, and they have the commitment forms. They're even if it's not on paper, they have the commitment forms that when you sign them, you are committed as much as if you had been sitting in a tangible office and signed a piece of paper with an ink pen. So one of the things that a lot of people, when I talk about financial education, a lot of people do not realize what in reality is happening when they say yes, whether it's with a breath of air, with a fountain pen, or with their signature attached to a document on a digital basis. The point of it is that our culture is at the point now that you can and will be held liable. And in many instances, the people could have avoided the situation if they just knew that the commitment on a cell phone is a contract. The commitment on an apartment is a lease. The commitment on a car is a contract. And most of the business relations of Western Europeans, which includes the United States, has been based on the enforceability of a contract. And the people who deal most in contracts have been working constantly trying to reduce how difficult it is for them to enforce a contract. It used to be that you would have to go to the state where the contract was signed. That's not the case any longer, because on the paperwork they say, you agree to be bound by the laws of the state of California, and you're in Ohio, and that's enforceable. The last point I want to raise concerning the triggers that cause people to enter into mental health issues regarding money is childhood beliefs. There are so many things that people in our culture are taught, and they in fact believe, and therefore they are bound by those beliefs.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie, Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback. Providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring, it's volunteering in your community, it's shoveling a neighbor's snow, or cutting an elderly person's grass for them, or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
We are strong and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Presenting great moments in the history of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit PeaceCorps.gov.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave you.
I had a situation many, many years ago, and this dealt with the topic of bankruptcy, which is very limited now. The credit industry has persuaded Congress to continue to reduce the significance, the access, and the reward of bankruptcy. Just as a note, credit card debt is not dischargeable in bankruptcy, but debt for health care, which could include open heart surgery and all kinds of things and be in hundreds of thousands, is dischargeable. So that is a value judgment that Congress made to say credit card debt is more important than the debt to a hospital or a medical care provider. But the point of it is that in many instances, people had childhood beliefs. The farmers that I represented who said, I'm not going to dishonor the legacy of my family. This farm has been in our family for 100 years. Well, if the entire agriculture economics change, it may be difficult for that farmer to continue. But remember, that's based on the childhood beliefs that this person, the family member, is responsible. And there are just so many other instances about where childhood beliefs are carried into the present, and when circumstances change, there is no real control in avoiding having to address the financial worries of the day. There are a number of recommendations for coping with financial worries. So this is really outside many other structures. How do we cope with financial worries? There are just a few that I have come across that I just consider important and items that should be considered. Number one is to maintain your active relationship with friends, church members, social friends, and organizations that are edifying. Now, the reason for that is that in many instances, you're talking about a support system, a system where people realize that the individual is of value, that this is a worthwhile person, and we can all work to help them overcome whatever the specific limitation or challenge may be today. The second thing is that in many instances, what the individual knows is not enough. And even what the members of the group know is not enough. And under those circumstances, you or your friend may need to get professional advice. There are two categories that are clear. One is medical, and that is if you're dealing with a mental health issue as a result of money issues, you need to have support from that wide medical range because there's so many different categories of medical providers. But it also may be time for you to get legal advice. What are your choices, and are you in fact using all the resources that are available to you under these circumstances? the fact that we need that person to avoid chemical substances, alcohol, drugs, and so forth. And I don't know whether marijuana is a chemical substance, but it certainly is a substance that will alter mind and mental faculties. And the reason for that is simple. That amounts to just simply an escape tactic. Something that is focusing on avoiding or denying the issues arising from money, but that won't be solved by the chemical substances. For many people, the fourth item is maintaining a daily routine. Many people go into hiding, denial, when they are confronted with very, very serious financial issues. Too much money? Yes. Too little money? Very, very often. Ends up with people going into hiding, because if they're hiding, they are, for that limited time, avoiding the issues that their money problems presents. And the final thing is, everybody who is confronted with any kind of mental health issues needs help in setting aside their financial shame. In our culture, a person who is found homeless is most often looked down upon. The tragedy is that there are instances of homelessness that are the result of such a simple thing. And I don't know, I'm sure some of you have heard the story of one flat tire. The person who had the last chance and was on their way to work and had a flat tire, and so therefore did not appear timely, lost their job, didn't have pay, were not able to make the payment for their lease or their mortgage, ended up being evicted or foreclosed upon, and all of that was the consequence of a flat tire that turned into a financial problem of the highest order. And that person recovering needs to be able to set aside the financial shame and tell whomever they have to tell that this was a result of a number of unfortunate consequences. And it's not because I was a or am a bad person. It's because all of these things happened to me. We have a culture where marketing programs actually control much, and I don't even know if it's most, of what happens to citizens in the United States. And I say citizens, but I mean people who live here, because there are many people who are not citizens. Too much credit card debt is an issue that could be addressed very easily. If, in fact, the credit grantors determine the level of debt that a person could, in fact, handle and would actually be honest with that, we would eliminate a tremendous number of problems. For example, the fact that credit card companies are in competition with one another to issue cards. And they're also in competition that if they have a, quote, good customer, they may be in serious competition to increase the debt limit. Unfortunately, what a lot of people don't know is that borrowing money at between 20 and 30% interest is a loan, or it would be loans that you really can't afford. interest rates are such that you almost are not going to be able to pay them off, because they offer the minimum payment, and the minimum payment has been, again and again, determined to be less than what it takes to pay the debt off completely. It's really a matter of continuing, maintaining your relationship with that credit grantor. And that's a part of why we have 77% of Americans who have anxiety about money. A credit card, in many instances, offers you the ability to exchange the value of a piece of plastic in your pocket or purse for cash, for money. And the anxiety comes when that exchange produces the question, how will I pay for it? Because, again, if a person loses their job, that's normally the connection with how you're going to pay for it. We have had a situation in the United States that actually has addressed some medical characterizations, because in many instances, both in terms of employment or in terms of medical treatment or insurance claims, the question is, what is it that this person is experiencing that should entitle them to a different, unique treatment, or in some cases, some sort of resources that can make a difference and help them through this particular crisis? So we have recognized the term money trauma. Money trauma. Money trauma has been defined as the excessive fear of poverty or financial ruin. For the person who's actually encountered that, somebody may tell them that your reaction or your fear reaction was excessive, but for them, it was the most real experience because it required them to do something or to experience something that others avoided or never had to confront. And many times this money trauma is related to the concept of guilt. I mentioned childhood beliefs before. There are many people who believe that if you're a good person, your effort as an adult will produce sufficient money. And if you don't have it, then you can experience guilt because it's obviously something that you did not do that caused you to have a crisis with money. So money guilt is real. It's a term that we do not hear in exchanges in so much of our society, but it is real when dealing with psychologists and many medical care providers. There is also a term, chromatophobia. Chromatophobia is an extreme or irrational or overwhelming fear of money. The interesting thing about this term, it is has connected with the fear of spending money. So in other words, if I spend this money, it's going to produce all of these terrible results. And with those terrible results, if I don't spend the money, I can avoid it. Well, of course, the problem with that is that there are certain things that you have to spend money for. So if you have this experience going on in a family, there may be things that members of the family, often children, are denied because it would require spending money, and they may suffer medical, emotional, or other consequences because the resources are not available. I mentioned a little while ago the concept of a gig economy. Now, this is in a country where there was a long history of workers being paid on an agreed amount for their work, the hours, the extra time, the overtime, whatever. But it's an interesting dynamic that in 2024, work stress is the number one stressor that Americans report. A lot of people know that Monday is the highest reported day for heart attacks in our society. And many people report that as the stress that they incur on Sunday because they have to get ready to go to work and appear at work on Monday. And as a result of those, there may be other health issues, but as a result of those stressors, work stress, the fact that going to work is the most difficult thing that many people do in the course of any and every week. Well, money and mental health are critical. There are any number of dynamics that we need help with. And for the most part, we need to recognize that maintaining good relations with money is a direct requirement for maintaining good mental health. The biggest thing that people who deal with advising in crisis recommend is what lawyers often call the get well plan. What are you going to do that's going to address this situation, that's going to provide you with a tangible, workable, practical solution? And you need to know, you need to work it out, you need to know what it is, and you need to put it down on paper or in a digital form so that you can consult it. You need to know that I am going to do these things regularly, consistently, and advisedly. In addition to that, in many instances, people need to consult with financial advisors. I'm not talking about the advisors who are sales agents, because sales agents are normally working on a commission to increase the amount of your obligations so that they can be compensated for their effort. I'm talking about people who try and help you work out your present situation, your present stressors that relate to money. So that's way up on the list. In addition to that, it's recommended that everyone start or have a savings account. I read something that said, even if it's only $5 a month, it's still addressing the issue of savings. If, in fact, money problems, money crisis is at such a level that the welfare of you as an individual or the family or even the community is at stake, there should be some consultation with mental health professionals. Those can be social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists. There are any number of different labels, but the point of it is those are professionals who are aimed at helping you both confront and prevail over those financial worries that are at such a level right now. There are, in fact, resources, legal resources, that most individuals cannot deal with without professional help. And that doesn't necessarily mean many cases, it's a debt counseling agency. There are a number of them, and I'm certainly not prepared to mention any particular ones because all of them have their limitations as far as I'm concerned. But the fact of the matter is, these are agencies that negotiate the resolution of debt issues, which include payment of an amount less than 100% of the debt. Often, there are times when the resources of the individual are such that they have to pay 100%, but they get more time. And in some cases, the resolution is based on a personal loan, an organization that will actually provide a personal loan with different terms and resolving or consolidating the obligations that an individual has with a number of creditors. There are also balance transfers where this loan consolidation company will help the individual put all of the debt in one obligation and in many instances reduce the interest rate and other fees that are associated with it, the obligation. And then the third category is equity loans for homes. Unfortunately, in the last at least two decades, we have gone through such high home foreclosures that in many instances, home equity loans are and could be, or maybe even should be, the answer. But in many cases, people didn't even know that was available to them. Or when they approached the creditors, instant answer, the easiest answer was no. Whereas when some company helping them approaches them as company to company or professional to professional, they listen to the proposal. When I mentioned financial education, I didn't go into the specifics of what really is at stake. When people are borrowing money, very rarely do they have the translation of what the interest rates are to what that actually means in cash. So, for example, there is lending at anywhere from 6 to 35% in the United States. And the point of it is an $18,000 loan after 4 years is going to have another $8,286 in interest and fees. So it's not 18, it's $26,000. And most people have no idea that that's going to be the case. One of the resources that I encountered that I can certainly recommend is Psychology Today, January 22nd, 2024, has an article of 6 ways to reduce financial anxiety and to boost mental health. Those are positive items concerning mental health. Psychology Today, January 22nd, 2024. One of the other things that everyone needs to know, that in the credit industry, you are regarded both in terms of who you are and where you work, but also on your credit score. Credit scores are primarily controlled by 3 companies, Equifax, Credit Karma, and TransUnion. And so everyone should be aware of their credit score and should be working on improving it as long as they are going to continue to borrow money or to need credit score improvement for rental, for insurance. insurance premiums and for other items they encounter in the economic community in the United States. There are a couple of other points. I know I'm running low on time here. Many of the things that have happened historically, I'm talking about the threats and the, and all of the abuses that went with credit collection, many of those have been addressed by a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And that law is still on the book, and it limits the tactics that can be used by individuals or companies that are attempting to collect a debt. So while none of you listening to this may know much about the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, if in fact you, friends, or coworkers of yours are confronted with those aggressive tactics, it may be important for you to know or to find out about the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And one of the final things is that when you're looking at even incurring a credit obligation, you need to know the bottom line. What is the total cost of this obligation? It doesn't matter whether it's buying a TV or buying a car or buying a home. There is a way that the seller or the people involved in financing can tell you what the total cost is going to be, and that should be a part of the considerations that you have before you incur the obligation. I guess as parting words, I want to tell you that in those years that I was referring to, of my practice and my exposure to the difficulties of debt and the stress that debt can have, I saw hundreds, and I will report even thousands of people who survived, who thrived. And when they came out on the other side, they were smarter, they were tougher, and they were prepared to go forward in a new way and with new vigor. So I wish you all the very best, and that you all avoid the attack on your mental health as a result of money issues. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for sharing this wisdom with us. Thank you for, oh, wow. There's so much in what you said that I believe will help so many of us. And I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for your excellent life and your shining example. Thank you so much to all of you who listen, who share, who sponsor, who donate to all of our platforms, all of our friends, all of our prayer warriors. We thank you so much for making these conversations possible and available. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima. Thank you so much for joining us again. Thank you, and much love, honor, and respect to our guest today. Thank you so much for each one of you. And thank you, thank you, thank you, most of all, for always being kind and supportive of everything I try to do. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I can't wait until we're all together for another conversation again. See you next time.
Come and save her. Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Let her believe it, get on her knees and pray her. Then pray her and never look back once the world forgets.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.